Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It is Monday, June 1st, 2026, and this is our technology edition.
Today, we are examining the profound decoupling of venture capital momentum from traditional growth metrics. We are moving away from an era of subsidized scale toward a landscape defined by rigorous, unit economic sustainability.
In short, the era of easy money has officially ended. $32 billion. That is the new floor for a top-tier venture capital exit, according to David George and David Clark at A16Z. We're talking about a tenfold explosion in the required scale for a win in just 24 months. Today, we're looking at the new economic reality of Silicon Valley, where the era of the $1 billion unicorn exit is effectively dead.
It's not just that the ceiling has moved, it's that the entire structural foundation of how tech companies scale is shifting from pure software to massive, capital-intensive physical infrastructure.
It sounds like trying to win a game of Monopoly, but instead of just buying Boardwalk, you now have to personally fund the construction of the entire New York City subway system just to stay in the lead.
That's actually a surprisingly accurate way to frame the CapEx explosion we're seeing. We are looking at a massive global industrial renaissance, driven by the sheer physical requirements of AI, data centers, specialized chips, and energy grids. To give you a sense of the magnitude, we're looking at a projected $800 billion in capital expenditure coming from just four public companies in 2026 alone.
So the software is eating the world era is being replaced by. Software is eating a very expensive, very heavy, and very power-hungry steak.
The pattern is clear, the SaaSpocalypse narrative, the idea that AI will simply dissolve the valuation of every enterprise software company, is actually a bit of an exaggeration if you look at the plumbing. On the A16Z show, the host noted that the SaaSpocalypse is empirically unsupported by business spend data, because seat-scale contracts still represent about 65% to 75% of software spend, while these new token-based models haven't even hit 0.5% of the market yet.
Okay, so the software companies aren't dying, they're just being integrated.
They're being squeezed by the cost of the layer beneath them. But the real shift is in the capital itself. We're seeing a convergence of venture capital and private credit. As Mark Rowan of Apollo discussed with David Haber, the industry is moving toward a total portfolio approach where you aren't just betting on equity, but parceling risk across infrastructure credit. Private credit funds like Apollo and Blackstone are actually using these AI infrastructure builds to solve their own concentration risk, moving away from volatile SaaS lending toward $36 billion debt deals in stable investment-grade areas like the energy transition.
So the big money isn't just looking for the next app, they're looking to become the utility company that powers the app.
The modern corporate CFO is essentially running a three-tiered financing strategy now. They use banks for short-term liquidity, public markets for the plain vanilla stuff, and private markets for the complex, non-standardized requirements, like, say, building a massive new data center. This is a move away from pure equity financing toward a model where you use specialized credit to scale physical assets.
It sounds like a lot of pressure on the startups that actually want to grow. I mean, if you can't find the cash to build the thing, you're just a very expensive idea.
We've seen that play out. On How I Built This, Brian Smith described how scalability can actually be a kiss of death. He had preseason orders projecting up to $20 million in revenue, but because he couldn't finance the $5 to $7 million needed for the actual product, the venture's viability was threatened. The bottleneck wasn't demand, it was the inability to bridge the gap between an order and a physical unit.
But there is a way to do it without just begging for more equity, right?
Right, the letter of credit is becoming a vital, low-capital alternative. Smith realized that his primary hurdle wasn't a lack of total cash, but a lack of a guarantee to his suppliers. By securing a standby letter of credit, he could maintain production cycles without needing massive, dilutive infusions of liquid capital. That's the kind of financial entrepreneurship that's becoming mandatory as we move from software-centric to hardware-centric industries like robotics and defense.
It's almost as if the move fast and break things mantra is being replaced by move carefully and build a power plant.
It has to be. When you're dealing with the scale of the AI frontier, you can't just break things. But there is a darker side to this scaling. On the All In podcast, the host discussed how the convergence of the major frontier models, think GPT-5 or the latest Anthropic iterations, is happening within a tiny 0.3% performance margin. This suggests that the massive capex we're seeing in training might actually be hitting a point of diminishing economic returns because the models are commoditizing so rapidly.
Which brings us to the AI washing problem. If the tech is becoming a commodity, it's very easy for an executive to say, oh, we didn't miss our targets because of bad management, we missed them because we're integrating AI.
And that's moving from a PR headache to a legal one. On the All In podcast, securities litigation expert Donnie King warned that AI washing, using AI integration as a scapegoat for underlying business instability or to justify clearing out middle management, could actually be prosecuted as securities fraud if it's used to mask fundamental operational failures.
So it's not just about the cost of the chips, it's about the cost of the lies.
It's about the entire stack. On Lenny's podcast, the analysis suggested that economic value often migrates up the stack to the application layer. Just as mobile data consumption exploded without necessarily making the telecom carriers richer, the real profit might not be in the commodity infrastructure of the models themselves, but in the specific applications built on top of them.
But even the models themselves are playing a high-stakes game of political chess.
Definitely. There's a lot of talk about red capture strategies. The All-In crew suggested that Anthropic's aggressive lobbying and doomer rhetoric might be a calculated move to create a safety halo. By pushing for heavy regulation, they can position themselves as the only responsible actor, effectively using regulation to build a moat that prevents smaller, less regulated competitors from even entering the arena.
It's a brilliant, if slightly terrifying, way to use the law as a competitive advantage.
It's the new reality. The threshold for a win has moved to $32 billion. The models are commoditizing, and the infrastructure is becoming a massive, debt-fueled industrial project.
Investors need to stop looking for the next viral app and start looking at who owns the energy grid and the credit lines.
Keep an eye on the quarterly CapEx guidance from the big four cloud providers. Any downward revision there will signal that the era of infinite scaling has hit its limit.
But as we build these massive, interconnected digital fortresses, the walls around them are getting much harder to defend. I think we've finally reached the point where the attack surface is no longer a technical metaphor, but a literal map of every single satellite, power grid, and smartphone on the planet. We aren't just talking about hackers stealing passwords anymore, we're talking about the complete structural disintegration of digital trust.
That sounds apocalyptic, Maya, but to understand why the landscape is expanding, you have to look at the shift from targeting end users to targeting the very plumbing of the internet. We're seeing a move from simple data theft to the exploitation of the fundamental synchronization and automation layers that keep modern civilization running.
It's not just a broken window in a house, it's someone rewiring the city's entire electrical grid from a laptop in a basement.
Stepping back, take GPS for instance. Most people think of it as a navigation tool for Google Maps, but as Maria Varmasis and producer Ethan Cook have highlighted, the real vulnerability lies in timing precision rather than positioning data. For CyberWire Daily, if an adversary can manipulate the timing signals of the GPS GNSS constellation, they can cause catastrophic failures in the synchronization of power grids, cellular networks, and energy pipelines.
Wait, so you're telling me a hacker doesn't need to hack the power plant itself? They just need to trick the clock it uses to stay in sync?
We can trace that further. This desynchronization can lead to failures in load balancing for the power grid, or even disrupt the precise timestamps required for global financial transactions. For CyberWire Daily, there is even a concept of time travel fraud, where attackers manipulate GPS timing signals to backdate or manipulate the sequence of financial transactions, making fraudulent activities appear legitimate and undetectable.
That is genuinely terrifying. It's like being able to rewrite the ledger of a bank by just messing with the timestamp on the receipt.
It gets deeper because our reliance on this precision has grown exponentially. In 2000, the removal of selective availability increased civilian accuracy from 100 meters to 10 meters, which, while great for hikers, unintentionally expanded the surface area for large-scale economic disruption. And because we are moving toward centralized cloud computing and massive AI-driven data centers, a localized signal interference could now trigger a massive, single point of a failure for the global internet.
I mean, I thought my biggest tech headache was a slow VPN, but now I'm worried about the literal fabric of time and space being used to bankrupt the global economy.
It's part of a broader shift in the supply chain. We are seeing what risky business calls a vertical integration of the failure stack. Recent breach involving Team PCP demonstrated how a single compromised extension in a Microsoft-curated marketplace allowed threat actors to penetrate the internal ecosystem of a Microsoft-owned company, affecting approximately 3,800 internal repositories.
The very tools we use to build and manage our software are now the Trojan horses.
The implication runs deeper. It's not just the code itself, it's the automation around it. We saw this with the Megalodon campaign, where attackers compromised over 5,000 GitHub repositories by injecting malicious payloads directly into automated workflows. Even more advanced is the SimJack technique, where the vulnerability isn't broken code, but the automation trust of developers, exploiting how AI coding agents handle symbolic links to compromise entire CI/CD pipelines.
It sounds like we're building a house of cards where every new smart feature is just another way for someone to pull a card from the bottom.
And the speed of this is accelerating because of AI. We're seeing a vibe coding culture where developers deploy unvetted, highly functional components like MCP servers that lack essential security patterns. This is creating a massive gap between the speed of zero-day exploit development and our ability to patch. In fact, the supply curve for discovered vulnerabilities has shifted significantly to the right. Screaming in the cloud suggests that finding CVEs is becoming much cheaper and faster, which could eventually collapse the economic incentive for bug bounties.
So the attackers are using AI to find the holes faster than we can even realize we have them.
Anthropic's recent decision to delay the public release of its Mythos-class models was a direct response to this. The decision to withhold advanced coding and reasoning autonomy was driven by the potential for misuse in automated cyberattacks. On the flip side, we're seeing AI-driven tools like Claude Mythos identify over 23,000 vulnerabilities at a scale that completely outpaces human capacity to validate them.
Which leads us to this idea of identity hijacking. It's not about stealing a password anymore, it's about tricking the system into giving you a valid session.
Right, the Kali 365 phishing kits are a perfect example. They use device code phishing to bypass multi-factor authentication entirely by tricking users into authorizing device codes, essentially granting the attacker a valid session token without ever needing a password. Even our trusted web content is becoming a vector, through ChatGPT vulnerabilities where hidden markdown in web pages uses prompt injection to trick LLMs into displaying phishing links.
It's a total breakdown of the traditional perimeter. If you can't trust the email, the code, the browser, or the clock, where is the perimeter?
The perimeter is dissolving into the infrastructure itself. We're seeing a shift where the commercial advertising ecosystem has been effectively weaponized. CyberWire Daily attackers are using smartphone location data from digital ads to track U.S. troop movements in conflict zones, essentially turning consumer surveillance into battlefield intelligence. Even the certificate authority industry is at risk. High-trust vendors like DigiCert can be compromised via low-complexity vectors like malicious screensavers to access customer portals.
It feels like the more connected we become, the more we are just providing a larger, more detailed map for anyone who wants to cause chaos.
It's a move from a discovery-centric model to a verification-centric one. The only way forward is to move security down into the infrastructure, where defenses are embedded natively and can operate at AI speed.
Infrastructure architects need to stop treating security as a layer and start treating it as a fundamental component of the hardware and protocol design.
Watch for the first major instance of a coordinated multi-sector outage, like a simultaneous power and cellular desynchronization, because that will confirm we've lost control of the physical-digital interface.
But if the very tools we use to write software are becoming the primary way to break it, what happens when we hand the steering wheel over to the software itself? We all thought we were heading toward a world where software would just write itself and we'd all go play tennis. Instead, we're just writing much more code, much faster, and it's all significantly more chaotic.
That's because we aren't just talking about LLMs as chatbots anymore. We've entered the agentic shift, where the workflow has moved from simple prompts to autonomous agents that can actually execute tasks. We're seeing a transition from developers writing lines of code to developers managing software factories, complex environments of CI/CD pipelines and sandboxes designed to provide compounding returns on AI output.
So instead of being poets, we've all been promoted to middle managers of a bunch of very fast, very caffeinated robots.
Worth noting, Kyler Middleton describes it as becoming a people manager of robots, where your job is to define the constitution, the rules, and boundaries within which these agents operate. But there's a massive technical bottleneck here. As Dax Rod points out, there is a growing complexity paradox where AI makes individual tasks easier, but the sheer volume of code is exploding. In fact, All In with Chamath, Jason, Sachs, and Friedberg noted a 14 times year-over-year increase in GitHub code commits, which actually drives a paradoxical rise in engineering demand because the resulting system complexity requires even more human oversight.
It's the classic more efficiency, more mess loop. I suppose it's a bit like the Jevons paradox. The more efficient we make the coding, the more code we just end up throwing at the problem.
There's a signal here. It's creating this phenomenon of vibe coding, where tools like V0 or Lovable allow you to iterate through entire codebases in the time it takes to drink a coffee. You can essentially discard an entire architecture if the vibe is off. But as Dexter Horthy from Human Layer warns, this is creating a massive, unaddressed infrastructure demand. Every time a user prompts a new interface, a new Git repository has to be instantiated, which could eventually overwhelm centralized systems like GitHub.
And I imagine that's where the technical debt part gets scary. It's easy to be a visionary when you're just deleting everything and starting over, but someone still has to deal with the plumbing.
That's the muted prickle effect Dax Rod mentioned. Traditionally, developers feel a psychological sting when they write hacky code. But with agents, that guilt is disappearing because the cost of implementation is so low. You're essentially planting landmines in your codebase without even feeling the discomfort of doing it. We're seeing a rise in product rot where even modern startups see their software quality degrade within a single year because they're prioritizing functional speed over structural integrity.
We're essentially building skyscrapers out of Legos and acting surprised when the foundation starts wobbling.
It's even more structural than that. The very way we define correctness is changing. As the Screaming in the Cloud team argued, the real value of agents isn't just writing code. It's their ability to navigate bad interfaces like complex CloudWatch JSON that are functionally powerful but unusable for humans. But the real work is shifting towards spec-driven development. Laura Tacco of AWS and Birgitta Berkeler from ThoughtWorks highlight that the value isn't in the files themselves, but in a workflow of discovery, planning, and implementation.
But isn't there a risk that we just end up in a massive, automated version of the 1990s waterfall model? Just generating massive, perfectly structured documents that no human actually reads.
That is a massive risk. Berkeler warns that we might spend too much time over perfecting specifications, losing the rapid feedback loops that make Agile work. We're seeing a review fatigue, where developers are stuck auditing massive, agent-generated markdown files just to catch early-stage errors. It's a shift from technical execution to high-stakes project management.
Software architects are essentially becoming auditors of a mountain of AI-generated paperwork.
It's the agentic depth versus agentic overload struggle. While agents are gaining the ability to perform complex tasks like packet captures, we're also seeing a new frontier of risk, like the SimJack technique, where attackers exploit the uncritical automation trust of developers to compromise entire CI pipelines through symbolic links.
Engineering leads need to stop measuring developer output by commit volume and start investing heavily in the automated guardrails that prevent these agents from accidentally deleting the production database. Keep an eye on the emergence of token-heavy RAG architectures. If the cost of managing all that context starts to outweigh the value of the code produced, the whole agentic bubble might pop. But as these agents scale, the sheer amount of electricity and silicon needed to keep them running is starting to hit a very physical wall.
I was looking at the CapEx projections for the next few years, and we are witnessing something unprecedented, a massive physical build-out of the entire AI stack that feels less like a software cycle and more like a heavy industrial revolution.
You say heavy industrial revolution, but I think you mean an expensive way to make sure we have enough specialized bricks and wires to keep the chatbots running.
It's more than just wires, though. Look at Dell. Their CFO, David Kennedy, just raised their AI server revenue guidance from $50 billion to $60 billion. He's describing a shift from just training models to inferencing, which essentially moves the demand from just high-end GPUs to a much broader AI factory model, including storage and networking.
So the AI factory is just a fancy way of saying we're building massive, power-hungry warehouses that need more than just a few fancy chips to function.
The data tells a story: the bottleneck is moving. We've gone from a GPU shortage to a high bandwidth memory or HBM shortage. Micron and SK Hynix are seeing revenue increases over 200% this year because HBM is now physically embedded in the chip architecture. Micron CEO Sanjay Mehrotra even predicts this memory supply crunch will persist well beyond 2026.
It sounds like a very expensive game of Tetris where the pieces are getting harder to find.
It's a one-way boom, but the costs are staggering. Bloomberg Tech reports we're seeing a shift in semiconductor valuations where the old cyclicality of memory is being replaced by this permanent AI demand, justifying much higher earnings multiples. But this massive expansion of data centers is driving a structural shift in global energy demand, necessitating a multi-billion dollar modernization of electrical grids just to prevent a compute deficit.
And I assume all this modernization comes with a side of everything is getting more expensive.
It's a telling detail. On Bloomberg Surveillance, analysts noted that the sheer scale of this CapEx is being described as every dollar since the invention of fire. We're seeing a move away from pure equity toward complex credit markets to parcel out this risk. And while people worry about a water crisis from these centers, the real crisis is the token economy. For example, Anthropic's infrastructure cost to serve a single user can hit $5,000 a month, compared to a $200 subscription.
So the math isn't even mathing yet. I mean, if Uber can blow through their entire 2026 AI coding budget in 4 months without any new features, how do CFOs actually justify this?
That's the trillion-dollar question. An MIT study found only 5% of CFOs can actually identify a positive ROI on AI yet. There's a real fear of an AI ROI crisis. However, companies like Meta are trying to bridge the gap by using consumer subscription revenue to offset these massive infrastructure costs.
Or as the All-In crew argues, the economic moat of all this massive spending might be eroding because software innovations, like Elon Musk reportedly rewriting training complexes in C, can slash costs from $10 billion to $10 million. We might be building a massive, permanent infrastructure for what ends up being a very cheap, undifferentiated commodity.
Even so, the physical reality remains. Whether it's the hardware, the power, or the specialized equipment from companies like ASML, the physical layer is being locked in.
Investors need to watch the credit spreads on data center construction loans to see if the financing for this factory actually holds up. Keep an eye on the energy prices in Northern Virginia. A spike there will tell you if the grid is finally buckling under the weight of all this silicon. But if the physical world is getting so expensive, does the real innovation move to where the overhead is lower, like the next frontier of software-defined hardware in orbit? We're officially moving into an era where your car might actually decide it's too smart for your iPhone. Rivian is intentionally ditching Apple CarPlay and Android Auto because, apparently, screen mirroring is just too shallow for their vision.
It's a fundamental shift from software-defined to AI-defined architecture. As Wassim Benset explained to Nilay Patel, Rivian is moving toward an agentic framework where the vehicle acts as an orchestrator, using something called Model Context Protocol to bridge your car with personal assistants like Gemini.
Because why just play Spotify when your car can autonomously plan a dinner reservation based on your Google Calendar and your specific preference for mid-century modern decor?
Two things stand out, but the real technical heavy lifting is happening under the chassis. On Bloomberg Tech, analysts noted that the upcoming R2 platform is moving AI processing from the cloud to the edge by utilizing onboard hardware capable of 200 sparse TOPS. By shifting inference to local hardware, Rivian can virtually eliminate latency and slash the long-term unit economics by removing constant cloud connectivity costs.
So less calling home to server, more thinking on the fly. It sounds efficient until you realize this is all part of a massive $6 billion marriage between Rivian and Volkswagen.
It is a massive play. Decoder with Nilay Patel argued that the RV tech joint venture functions as a fractal organizational model, where Rivian provides the foundational DNA, the electrical architecture and engineering culture, to scale across the entire VW group, from the ID.1 to Bentley. They're replacing hundreds of fragmented single-function ECUs with a few centralized brains or zonal computing architectures.
Which sounds great for the software, but I can't help but think about the hardware side chaos. We're seeing these massive, interconnected systems everywhere, yet the physical infrastructure is still so brittle.
You're right, the recent Blue Origin Glenn explosion creates a systemic risk for NASA's Artemis program, as the destruction of launch pad infrastructure threatens the entire $10 billion New Glenn backlog.
Automotive software is scaling upward, but our physical launch pads are still one mistake away from a total standstill. Volkswagen's ability to integrate Rivian's zonal architecture into their legacy luxury brands will determine if this agentic vision survives the transition to mass production. Watch for the first reported latency spikes in the R2's edge AI processing. If the local compute can't handle the orchestration, the whole driverless assistant promise collapses. As we wrap up this week, the common thread pulling every story together, from the massive $800 billion capex projections of the hyperscalers to the surge in automated code commits, is the sudden heavy gravity of the digital world. We are moving out of an era of weightless, infinite scalability and into an era of physical constraints. The frontier is no longer defined by how many users you can onboard, but by how much energy you can secure and how much physical infrastructure you can deploy.
So here's the picture. The biggest implication here isn't just for the engineers, but for the institutional investors like Apollo or Blackstone. The fundamental calculus for venture capital is shifting from software-driven margins to industrial-scale risk management. If you are a decision-maker at a firm like A16Z or Microsoft, your primary challenge is no longer just validating a product's utility, but managing the massive, interconnected dependencies of a world where a glitch in a timing synchronization layer can cascade into a physical supply chain failure. We are transitioning from being architects of logic to being stewards of a high-stakes, energy-intensive utility.
It's a transition from managing code to managing complexity. The tools that allow us to generate massive volumes of software almost instantly are simultaneously making our entire digital ecosystem more brittle and harder to audit.
So if you want to know if this new heavy asset model is actually holding together, keep a close eye on the upcoming quarterly guidance from the major cloud providers. If we see a sudden pivot toward decelerating infrastructure spending despite rising demand, it will signal that we've hit the hard ceiling of what this new physical-first reality can sustain.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Weekly Digest. We'll be back next Monday to see where the pieces land.